Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com, follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show, subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Christmas. Merry Christmas. In the opening to the show there, you were getting just a little sample of some of the exciting new Christmas music coming out of these socially aware college campuses all over America. I hope you enjoy these songs. And on this very special day, a gift for you of sorts. So let me tell you a little bit about what I'm doing here. There's a new year upon us. In that new year, 2016, if you don't have a calendar in front of you, there's going to be many exciting changes coming for the School Sucks Project. And one of those changes is a lot more material added to our bonus content section, which I call the AV Club. In fact, probably about half of what we produce in 2016 will wind up being bonus material. Now, don't worry, we're going to produce more in this coming year, so there'll still be plenty of free but valuable podcast entries. But there is a cost for the storage of audio files online and the bandwidth needed to download them. So I need to start clearing some of the older stuff out. And as I've said before, I always get a little bit discouraged when I see some of these entries that I thought were really entertaining and even educational. There's plenty of educational stuff in the bonus content section as well. Have 12 listens or 15 or even 25 listens. That's not enough. So I made myself a little list of some of the items that I thought were undiscovered or underappreciated, and I'm going to let them go today for free. This also provides me an opportunity to express my gratitude to you, the listener, for your participation and your engagement in the School Sucks Project. I am really, really grateful that you still listen to the show. There are a lot of podcasts out there. Now, granted, many of them suck, but there are a lot of people competing for your precious time and attention. And this is the best method that I have of sending a nice little gift to thousands and thousands of people. So don't try to listen to all this stuff today. You know, spend time with your family, your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or your husband, or your wife, and your kids, and your grandma. Oh gosh, your grandma. You know, don't let grandma wind up in the corner while you argue with your uncle and your dad about Donald Trump. Bring her into the fold. She's got stories. She lived through Operation Desert Storm. But yeah, that's it for now. There's more news coming on the changes we're going to be making in 2016. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas or whatever, and a happy new year. And you know what? I'm proud of this collection of additional content that we produced. If you're already a subscriber, if you're already making a monthly contribution and you're a member of the AV Club, I hope there's some exciting discoveries in these next 9 installments. And of course, if you're a regular listener and you're still listening, which means you find this show entertaining and valuable, I hope you'll consider supporting us. You go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV and you can sign up there. Thank you in advance. This next piece of audio was recorded in November of 2014. It is an unreleased episode of the Sex, Lies, and Anarchy podcast. I join Antigone Darling and Matt Leftwich for a discussion about friendship and manliness.
You found sex,
lies,
and anarchy.
If you wanna fly.
Broadcasting to you from our authentic 19th century farmhouse in the Liberty Haven of New Hampshire.
Liberty is about to get personal. Listening to Sex, Lies, and Anarchy. I'm Antigone. I'm here with Matt.
Hello.
And Brett Vanat from School Sucks Podcast.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me on.
And when was the last time we had you on, Brett?
Oh, the last time, gosh, it must have been November 16th, 2012.
What a pro. What a pro.
Yeah. And the last time Matt was on my show, School Sucks, was in January of 2013. And we talked about the movie A Clockwork Orange, and I had a nice time then as well.
Good times.
Have you forgiven him for that, by the way?
For what?
Well, we were living together at the time, and you were doing show prep, and you told me, I'm never getting those 2 hours back.
Well, it's not that I didn't like the show. Well, did I tell you this? But I wasn't that verbose on your show at the time because I fell asleep like with 45 minutes left. So you and Corey were like rhapsodizing about all these like deep intellectual things. And I was like, I remember some dudes in their friggin' jammies running around beating people up and drinking milk.
And they really liked
it. Oh, the movie. You didn't care for the movie.
Well, it's not that I didn't care for the movie. I was sleepy and watching a movie. And those two things collided and I fell asleep and didn't want to admit it on the air because... So, yeah.
I was just such a big fan of you on this show. I figured you'd be great no matter what the topic was. So,
and
And actually, I mean,
he did not do a good job with that compliment.
No. I pretty
you know
much,
what?
I can count
men,
on Matt.
Men need to know how to take a compliment.
Yes.
That'll come back around.
Indeed it will. And Matt, I mean, I guess you're our token male on this show.
Whenever she can't find anybody else interesting, she's like, Matt's here. Matt'll do it.
Well, Sex, Lies, and Anarchy is supposed to be a show where libertarian women, or not even libertarian, just like politically aware women talk about things, because there really doesn't seem to be a lot of shows that do that. And I've had women on from Occupy and everything else. So when we need, you know, a pickup artist or someone else well-versed in these type of things, we call you.
Is tonight a notable thing in that you have more testosterone than estrogen flowing through the mics? Have you had two dudes on before?
Well, that's kind of personal. Well, about once a year, SLA and Puke and the Gang.
Oh, that's true.
You know, every once in a while we get together and do a show, two people from either show. And I mean, Brett, how often are you on Puke and the Gang these days?
Once a month. Last time I did it was about a month ago.
We're going to try to get the male perspective, I guess.
Oh, you will.
So I've been thinking a lot about friendship because Facebook decided that my name does not meet their name standards. I've had my account with my legal name for 5 years, and now they want my government ID to get access to my account, and there's no way that that's going to happen. So all my photos, all the conversations, all the, like, when I'm trying to prove a point in a thread and I write paragraphs, that's all gone. It doesn't even say Facebook user. I have other accounts with fake names, but those have not been flagged. I actually saw an article today about, and it was, this article was published on the 16th of this month, that a lot of women had their accounts deactivated and Facebook is slowly going through and fixing the bug.
Is there a way you can talk to a person?
No. I wrote appeals at facebook.com, and I also tried to put, you know, input fields to address my issue. But in order to send in that page where it's, you know, just you fill out the form, I need to attach a JPEG of my government ID. So to talk to them, I need to send them government ID.
I wonder if you could black out everything but your name and your picture. If not, how can we sue Facebook? Because there's money there.
Well, there's no suing a Facebook. You don't have a right to a Facebook page.
It's your life.
I think you could actually make a compelling argument that nowadays you do have a right to a Facebook page.
Like I have a right to a job.
I don't know if you could win that fight, but I'd like to fight that fight.
You know, I have photos that I took. Well, no, I have photos that I uploaded to Facebook that I then deleted off my phone. It's online. It's there forever. I've asked friends of mine to collect all the photos they have of me and send them to me. None of my friends have actually done that yet. And, you know, I am lacking the last 5 years of the majority of my internet presence. And that's my own fault. right? Yeah, because I allowed Facebook to own these images of me. And I'm fine with them owning images of me, but I don't even have access to them.
Yeah.
So that's been an interesting experiment. And now when I choose to reach out to someone and communicate with them, I am, you know, finding their email address or their phone number to text or whatever, and I am completely focused on that one person. When before, if I'm just sending out a chat real quick, I'm not really like focused on the communication and interaction I'm having with that person, which then led me to think more about, you know, friendships and how we behave with one another. Which brought me to that, and of course watching the show that we all watched before tonight, which was It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The first episode of the 2013 season was called The Gang Broke D, and it's all about how this group of friends is always razzing each other, giving each other shit, trading insults. I don't know if there's another way of saying that, but then I look around and that's something that like male friends will do.
Yeah.
And I've considered before the fact that in school, boys and girls are segregated. Do boys more so cultivate this culture? Is this more of a like militaristic thing with like jabbing the guy next to you, making sure he has the fortitude to be your brother in arms or, you know, your buddy during the zombie apocalypse, whatever it may be, which
like
I think is kind of ridiculous. Yeah. Like you're not living somewhere where this other tribe is going to attack you randomly.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a very interesting perspective, that there might be some biological drive for men to treat each other that way as a test. My from the work that I do and the things that I've read, my first question would be like, are those really your friends? You know, because most of this is happening like middle school, high school. I don't remember like having those kinds of interactions very much in elementary school. They were very common in middle school, very common in high school, and they continued on into college.
It's like the more you grew up and became a man, according to society standards, the like when you're in elementary school, if you and a, you know, male friend of yours had like a nice moment, a hug, talking about Barney or whatever the hell you talk about when you're that age.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. To like, and then maybe, okay, 2 7-year-olds walking around, maybe holding hands or something like that.
Hell
yeah. Your dad might not give you shit.
Right.
But when you're 13 and you're doing that, your dad's going to give you shit and tell you to be a man and that kind of thing. I mean, what if I want to hold somebody's hand? Right? I don't, but because I'm all man. But I'm saying if I wanted to nowadays, I'd get crap for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember, gosh, I don't know why this is the memory that comes to mind, but being that young, I remember wanting to see what other people's penises looked like.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was, but that
seemed. Did you not know what your father's penis looked like?
I don't, maybe I did, but it seemed like an okay thing to do. Like, hey, let's look at each other's penises when you're 6 or 7.
Sure.
But
let's play
not
doctor.
At 13, you know, like, hey, I want to check on your progress there.
And is the curiosity still there? And if so, like you mentioned Planet Fitness earlier tonight, when we were talking about show prep, is the curiosity still there? Do you have the urinal stall? Like right now it's acceptable to have the buffer. Like if somebody's peeing and there's 3 stalls to choose from around the guy and you sidle up right next to him, you're going to get looked at funny. That shit's weird.
It is.
You got to leave the buffer. That's just American social man culture.
Yeah. I mean, and if you get caught, you can just be like, I mean, he knows that everyone is curious. I would think they want to know how they size up versus everyone else. And you could just say, if the guy catches you, you just say, this is for my records.
I see.
Well, this is a very obvious example of the distance that men are supposed to keep from each other.
Yes.
Rather than having intimate friendships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to devolve into like dick jokes instead of like.
And even
right?
even yes. if you have a friend where you've kind of broken through that barrier and you actually are kind of intimate with, you know, like close to, even then when you do it, there's almost like a sort of tongue-in-cheek, like, you know,
yeah.
I'm being kind of gay.
Yeah.
It's like gay chicken, but not obvious. You know, gay chicken?
Yes, I know that game. But I mean, okay. It's like the hugging episode that you were on, Matt, when we looked at those photos of guys used to touch each other.
Yeah, like, but that kind of goes with what I was saying about just this path that I remember following is like how we treated each other. Like being more, I don't know if loving is the right word, but comfortable with that kind of stuff at a young age. But then like it seemed like friendship was about treating each other badly.
Mm-hmm.
Through middle school and high school. And because of the whole school experience, because that's where I focus a lot of my time, I would say that friendships evolve that way. And maybe people's understanding of what friendship is even beyond high school is because they learn about friendship in forced associations in an environment where they're forced to be around each other. And that's always where people treat each other badly. Like, are we really friends or are we just like kind of similar people who have to be around each other? So we call ourselves friends and we treat each other badly. But I think this other thing too, that maybe that hazing is part of, you know, a more unconscious kind of ritual.
I can see positive and negatives. Like I can see that, and we talked about this in the Rites of Passage show as well, that Western civilization does not have rites of passage for people. Like you go to college and you get really drunk, you know, like there aren't those ritualistic things like in other cultures, like quinceañeras for Mexican girls, bar mitzvahs for Jewish boys. There's nothing like that in like American culture. Like you're responsible now. You've achieved something now. You've unlocked the next achievement level, you know? There's just nothing like that. An awful representation of it would be graduating from high school. I'm from California, where you can graduate high school without knowing how to read. So it doesn't mean anything that you graduated from high school.
No.
And without those rites of passage, without those cultural like landmarks, you end up with a situation where like it used to be, you know, if you didn't go to college, you'd maybe live with your mom and dad for a little while and not have a job and be kind of a
societal
sore. Well, now it's like extending throughout the 20s and into the 30s. It's like that limbo stage that used to be maybe 4 years after high school if you didn't go to college, or if you're in college. Now that's extending through like your whole 20s, where you don't know what the hell you're going to do. You don't have any career path in mind. You're kind of an aimless.
That's okay. The government's there to help.
Well, what I was wondering
is the government doesn't want real men to exist.
Because real men would just punch Obama. And
you think real men would be on the dole and just...
That is a really good point. Because, I mean, like, I would, if I was, like, making a list of, like, what qualifies as a real man? Like, being able to pay your debts, make money for yourself and whoever your chosen dependents are. That kind of thing, where being on welfare, being out of work.
Right.
I don't want to get on living with your parents because I think that might be a valid financial choice nowadays. But
with the American dream being what it is, yes. Yeah, but I mean, during the Great Depression, how many men were killing themselves because they couldn't provide for them and theirs?
But it's not really that's disappearing from the actual men. It's the need for it being erased by the way the state works. Like, I think a lot of women don't feel like they need men anymore. You know, like the government is kind of stepping in and saying, we'll, you know, help you raise your children and taking over all
these.
Well,
they'll help you do everything.
Yeah, exactly.
They will live your life for you.
Exactly.
For both the genders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's true to a certain extent.
So did we actually say what the show was about, or did we just start talking?
Well, we were talking about how men will trade insults. And I also wanted to talk about the isolation of men. And in this way, the state is involved in it. There are men on the dole. There are plenty of people on the dole. And we can get into the whole Molyneux single moms thing, which is like the opposite of what we're saying with, you know, masculinity. But I have relationships with people, with friends. I invite people into my life who build me up and who I can build up and who we like, you know, we support each other and we comfort each other and things like that. And so I'm asking my male friends, what is this about the culture of jabbing each other?
So you're saying that women don't, when they're good friends, like punch each other in the titty for fun?
No, we don't.
Because guys will totally cup check other guys, just knocking the nuts.
That's rare. That's extreme.
Do you announce no homo before you do it?
No, just me and my brothers. Like a common one is you're like, check this out. And when they come in to check out, like you're pointing at your elbow, you just fire one right in the nuts. And it always works.
That's never been done to me, and I've never done it to anybody else.
I'm sorry.
Elbowing someone in the face?
No, the nuts.
Well, remember too, we live in a big country, you know, like anywhere else in the world, the United States would cover 30 countries, maybe. Especially
so
like
all
Europe.
Kinds of
so
people.
There's all kinds of cultures. There's, you know, nut punching kids, non-nut punching kids. Like we just don't do that in the Northeast. It's kind of, you know, sophisticated up here. Haze each other in other ways.
Is hazing something that replaces the rite of passage?
I think it replaces intimacy.
What do you mean?
Ooh.
Well, like two dudes being like real close and making eye contact and talking about their girlfriends. That doesn't really happen. I mean, when you watch a sitcom and it's like every single guy on a sitcom goes to the basketball court near his house and shoots baskets with his two black friends and they talk about their girlfriends and like their relationship problems. That happens. Most shows, that scene happens, whether it be a movie, a sitcom, whatever. I don't do that. I don't play basketball.
With two black friends?
Yeah, I need more black friends who play basketball.
Wait, are you black in this scenario?
No, it's usually a white dude, and he has like the upwardly mobile black friend, and he has the fat Jack Black roll friend who's like the funny guy, and they go to the basketball court and they talk about their relationships. Are you not watching the same movies I'm watching?
Apparently not.
This happens. This is a thing.
But it's all based around basketball. If it wasn't for the basketball, well, they couldn't have these conversations.
Oh, that's what you meant
by
black.
I mean, racquetball is a two-person sport, and you got to have like a three or four-person dynamic.
Sure.
So.
Well, you can play cutthroat in racquetball, just if you're listening at home and you don't like basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like basketball. Maybe that's why I've never attained a sufficient level of intimacy with my male friends.
Okay.
But you shoot hoops with your guy friends, and you talk about you think your wife's cheating on you, or like she...
There's an app for that.
But yeah, so apparently in like modern culture, at least this is what I've seen, and I have seen a lot of movies, so I know what I'm talking about. I know of which I speak. Y'all are looking at me funny.
I mean, as we were talking about before, TV and movies don't really reflect adult relationships.
They're the worst.
And yet they mold and guide them, because that's what people are looking at in their like brain turned off, just taking everything in way. So if you see enough movies and sitcoms where this happens, you suddenly start thinking like, wait, I'm going to go hang out at the basketball court and talk about my feelings with my bros. Right?
Well, I think so when we're young, we might model ourselves after what we see in the entertainment world. Like, I remember watching Teen Wolf, like, in the mid-80s, and I was like, those are the coolest guys. Michael J. Fox. This was way before we knew how cool Jason Bateman was. So it was Michael J. Fox and Stiles. Mm-hmm. Scott and Stiles. And I was like, me and my friend Greg were like, that's us. We want to be them.
Did you ever surf on the top of the car as a result of watching Teen Wolf in your youth?
No. But, I mean, just the way they act, like, I thought that was so cool. And, you know, it's interesting too that I think a lot of people do get a lot of social cues from what they see on television. But when I watch the way people treat each other in sitcoms now, the show that we talked about in prep was How I Met Your Mother, mm-hmm. the only sitcom that actually ever gave me a nightmare because the people treated each other so badly in it, seems to be based on the kinds of relationships that I had with my quote unquote friends in middle school. It seemed like they were just based on being mean to each other.
You know, I want to hear more about your nightmare, because I don't remember those people being that awful.
Really?
I can relate to it with a bunch of other shows that I've seen. And if anyone wants to call in on Skype about any American media and how people are awful and do awful things to each other in American media, you can add us on Skype with Sex Lies Anarchy. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and sexliesanarchy.com. There we go. Business done.
So you're saying How I Met Your Mother. I'm also thinking about a little bit of Seinfeld. Definitely It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which you mentioned. A group of people who hang out, spend all their time together, and yet they're always kind of like effing with each other, like big time.
Probably because they became friends in middle school high school, and they just don't allow each other to grow beyond that.
It seemed like when I was in middle school, what my memory of that is that lined up with How I Met Your Mother and maybe some shows like it, is that the best social currency was to be funny, but at somebody else's expense, right? So I understand this is a show that I'm watching and you're supposed to laugh, but it's always at somebody else's expense. When I feel like when I was growing up and watching shows like The Cosby Show or Cheers, the plots in those shows and the banter in those shows didn't rely so much on humor at somebody else's expense. So
didn't they though? Cheers?
No, because it was just like this. I mean, they would razz each other, but it was different. It was a difference of degrees, maybe. But it wasn't. I mean, How I Met Your Mother, I remember just being horrified by how bad everybody treated each other. And I think that whole being funny at somebody else's expense is kind of like it's about a dependence on the approval of others. Like, ha ha ha, I'm funny. So I have some kind of social currency.
Well, you're knocking someone else down.
Yes.
Which automatically makes you
Which moves higher. You up a peg. Yeah, exactly. Which is really, I think, a lack of self-esteem.
Yes. And I think most people in modern day American society are suffering from a low sense of self-esteem, be it because of school, because of, you know, whatever else. And then they treat other people as if they have that same low level of self-worth, which creates the vicious cycle. Everyone is And here we are. Here we are, like, imitating what I see on TV. It's awful people doing awful things to each other. If you do awful things to someone, they're going to be an awful person, like a tortured child in a cage. Then you let them out. Yeah, they're going to be a serial killer. We're just, like, being awful to each other. We did a show on compliments, and I think it was mostly around women. Because it was, you know, we started talking about the concept because of a skit by Amy Schumer, and it's about how women give each other backhanded compliments. I don't really hear men give each other a lot of compliments and a lot of, like, support and, like, good job, dude. It's always just some backhanded thing, you know, as we were talking about before, like, hey, in comparison to your earlier work, this was actually quite good. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I try. I mean, I really try. And sometimes I feel like I've gotten this response, like, the guy I was giving the compliment to didn't know what to do with it. Like, okay. Like, that's how, like, okay. You know, that, like, I feel like people have said that to me before when I try to say something nice. And I don't feel like it's obligatory. Like, I have like a quota of compliments I have to get out every day. Like, I say it when, hey, I'm feeling this right now. Wouldn't it be nice to share it with the person who's right there that it's about? But it doesn't always go over well. But I don't think they're ever backhanded compliments.
I think in a How to Win Friends and Influence People, which I think is a really good book that more people should read, and I read it and appreciate it, but don't do enough of it in my life and my personal interactions, I would definitely benefit from it. But in that way, I think if you had a agenda in your head of self-improvement ultimately, but if you're like, okay, I'm going to compliment these people that I see every day in my life, and not like in a creepy way and not in like an over, like, I'm going to compliment somebody once a day because they're going to pick up on that and be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But if you actually gave a genuine compliment that wasn't backhanded, if you did that to more people throughout your day, you would be changing your life for the better. People would like you more, as long as it wasn't like really obvious or skeevy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, people are so focused on themselves and what's going on in their life, where if somebody actually is like, hey, that thing you did, pretty good. Or like, dude, those jeans really make your ass look tight.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
That shit's going to win you friends.
I think it spreads gratitude too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you're handing out compliments, it's, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, I'm surrounded by a lot of good people, but you're also sharing that with these other people. You know, you've done good things. Here's some acknowledgement.
Yeah. And if it's a genuine compliment and it's like, hey, I recognize you. Shit that you're doing right. It's working.
Well, there's also a very human bias to look for the negative, which makes sense because the negative could, you know, kill you. Like, oh, that's a T-Rex.
Yeah.
And it goes, this holds true in every relationship that you have. If you're looking for the positive, you will see the positive. Your mind is going to automatically be looking for the negative. And I'd rather look at ways to build up my friends and keep an eye out for those things than be on the autopilot, only looking for the negative, only looking at things that could hurt me, only, you know, keeping an eye out for those things.
Right.
So looking for the positive is, I mean, some people are just disgustingly positive all the time, but you're saying that evolutionarily
speaking.
Oh,
I don't
mean
like those people. The bubbly people that are always happy are always the saddest people once I get to know them.
Most
I don't mean
people
like
are automatically
fake.
Programmed to find the negative just as a survival mechanism. So
exactly.
Finding the survival. Positive in the people around you is kind of a skill that you need to actually think about and, you know, like work
and
on.
I want to live a
I
conscious
to
life, to be conscious
to be
in
mindful,
your interactions
you?
With people. Yeah. And I want to bring up the site, The Art of Manliness, which we've all looked at today and before today. I read a bunch of articles on the art of conversation and how to take a compliment, just all these things that there seems to be a market out there for, because The Art of Manliness is
popular website.
It is a popular website that somewhere that men go for these questions. And then we were looking at that site versus Maxim, which is a very popular magazine for men. And the number one thing on their menu was women. Hottest 100, Naked 100, whatever it was. If you want real porn, you can go to one of the many porn sites. So this is like softcore porn on Maxim. What is that about? The Art of Manliness has, you know, things about, I don't think it has any nudie pictures on it. It has things about dressing and grooming, your career, your finances, your relationships, including fatherhood and friendships.
Yeah, like
you
how
know,
to
brotherhood.
How to ask for a raise, how to get a haircut, how to buy your winter wardrobe, just shit like that. That I guess I don't know if actually, because I hate when people like nostalgize the old days when the old days were probably pretty shitty too, or pretty good, depending on your perspective. But like when you read the site, it has like almost like a 50s flair to it, like the
earlier advice, earlier
yeah okay
30s
20s or some shit. So it's like stuff that dads used to teach their sons back then. I don't know if they actually did.
One out of three American like children grow up in a fatherless household. I read on the art of manliness today.
Like, I think it was called My Life. It was a Michael Keaton movie where he found out that he was going to die. And I think it was like cancer or something. And it was about the same time that he found out that his wife was pregnant. And it was a really good movie, like Michael Keaton and pretty much anything anyway. But he had a video camera in front of his face a lot of the movie. And he was like leaving a tape for his child. And I don't know if he knew it was going to be a son or if it or whatever. But the advice he was given was like really cool because it was like fatherly advice. It's like how to enter a room, how to shake somebody's hand, that kind of thing. And it was like, you know, kind of cool watching it because you're like, dads really ought to do this more.
Yeah. There's another movie that's more recent. The guy, I think it was called How to Be a Man. It's definitely on Netflix, and the guy doesn't do as good of a job as Michael Keaton in that movie. But yeah, you know, as far as those two sites, comparing the two sites, I think The Art of Manliness is more about internals, like things you can actually control, things you can actually do something about, and how that produces better externals, better outcomes in your life.
Okay.
And Maxim was more about externals, like just purely like, hey, you're a guy, you like cars, here's cars, you like boobs, here's boobs.
Hair gel, well, titties, explosions.
But, to the credit of The Art of Manliness, they have an entire section on cars. They have a separate section on sports. They have those things too.
I think that's after
even their
done.
Car section is not like buy a Camaro and get your ass laid. It's how to fix
fix your own Camaro.
Yeah. Like, hey, but that's not the focus. Like, Maxim just has that more as a focus. Like, maybe on The Art of Manliness, it's like, hey, is your mustache properly groomed? Do you know how to wear a suit? Do you know how to change a car battery? Great. Okay. You're ready. Maybe here's a boob. Congratulations. You've done the work, right? Here's one or two. And then back to work. Back to work on the internals.
Oh, just the one boob. Fatherhood. Mm. Like we said, there's an entire section on The Art of Manliness about fatherhood. From my reading, fathers weren't really around before. Now, with egalitarianism or whatever, the fathers are being more encouraged to be around their children. There's also the danger of like child pornography or whatever. Like, is that something that's keeping fathers away from their children? I know that's a reason that fathers are no longer like, or not no longer because they weren't at all before, but like you won't bathe your daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I knew someone who got the cops called on him as he changed his granddaughter in the back of his truck.
Oh my goodness.
She had to go. She was dirty. He couldn't go into the male restroom to change his granddaughter.
Yeah.
So he was changing her on the back of his pickup truck at a Home Depot parking lot. She was safe and like whatever, but he's changing her diaper and he got hassled by the authorities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the state. It's all just sounds like the state's interference in the family life. And people have bought into that, right? Like, oh, who should we call? Like, oh, those are our neighbors. Remember, I think people used to talk to their neighbors, but now there's someone we can call. You know, they used to, you know, and now I don't think people feel like they can do that anymore. By and large.
There's a middleman. The middleman is the cops. Instead of knocking on your neighbor's door saying,
exactly,
hey, I get up early in the morning. Would you mind, you know, can we negotiate? No. You need someone there with a badge to say who's right and who's wrong, which takes away from responsibility, which, you know, both men and women should be responsible. But like being responsible for your stuff is something that any like individual should own.
Right.
And you're not doing that when you're calling the cops instead of talking to your neighbor. And I think that's like a huge root cause of statism right there. Just the laziness. You'd rather steal from all your neighbors to not have one difficult conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which might not even be that difficult if you're, you know, if you know any psychology at all. Don't approach aggressively with an open mind, open to negotiation, just all these things that no longer exist.
Yeah. So instead of like, I know there's a lot of talk about the state, you know, either directly or indirectly diminishing masculinity. But I think more generally there is, you know, a diminishing of self-esteem for everybody, you know, because all we've talked about so many things where the state steps in, where there's opportunities for growth, you know, and they're squandered because there's someone to run to, you know, and self-assertiveness is a huge one, you know, and responsibility.
Wait, give me an example of where the opportunity is squandered.
Well, to actually deal with an uncomfortable situation.
Okay.
You know,
that's an opportunity for growth.
Which requires, first of all, living consciously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, here's the situation. Here's why it's troubling. Here's the other people involved. Taking responsibility. Like, okay, there's an action I need to take. And then asserting yourself properly in that action. You don't have to do any of those things anymore. Someone's bothering me. It's like tattling on someone in elementary
school. Being offended gives you extra rights. Not only badges, but right. also being offended.
Yeah.
You have the right to not be offended. Oh, dear Lord. Hey, Matt, make us happy.
I got nothing.
Oh, no.
What were we talking about? Sorry, I tuned out there for a minute.
Self-esteem. Living self-esteem. Consciously.
Well, okay, you were talking about the government doing this stuff. I think most government, like the more government you have, the less manly a situation is. And that sounds weird. But the government, people call it like the mommy state or the nanny state.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more paternalistic, I think, in that the more government influence you have in your life, the more interference you have in your life, the less you are being what a lot of people consider or should consider like manly qualities, like paying your debts, responsibility, knowing your neighbors and talking to them when you have an issue. Like every single thing that people are substituting the state for personal responsibility, it seems like you're getting less and less. And when I say like man qualities, these aren't exclusively men. I fucking love when women do this stuff too. These are good qualities. I just think that society has traditionally said that men definitely need to be like this.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying it's self-esteem, yeah. You know? And my last show was actually about stoicism, and part of stoicism is being tested, you know, and maybe even...
Is stoicism, like, I'm not 100% familiar with that. I kind of know what it means, but is it like being unreactive to life's ups and downs and being like...
No, it's about managing your reactions.
Being like a rock in the face of adversity, shit like that?
Well, there's stoicism as a philosophy, and then there's stoicism as we use it today with a small s, which does kind of mean like an emotional distance or coldness, but that's not really what the stoic philosophy is. But the small s stoicism, I think, is derived from the philosophy in that you are able to control emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's not, you feel everything, but you don't let your emotions control you in stoicism.
That is actually like in like the whole, if you do a lot of reading at all of pickup artistry, that's one of the things that you need to aspire to be as far as like the self-help section of it is you need to be emotionally unreactive. Don't not feel, don't not have opinions, don't not think, but you need to be kind of like the, you know, if everybody's freaking out, you need to be like the rock in the storm. You need to.
Isn't that just maturity?
That's what, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not in any way a niche. It's not over here like if you want to get the
men
pussy,
might be better it's at
just
it
this the, yeah that's how you should be.
Well, it's recognizing your sphere of control, right? So I remember this girl I was with like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and so many of our conversations were about people that were bothering her, like things she had problems with. And I didn't have the vocabulary at the time, but I was like, there's nothing you can do about any of it. Like this, we're wasting our time. It's like complaining about TV characters, you know, like these aren't even people who are central to your life. Leave them where they are. And you know, it's not something that was specific to her as far as, you know, dealing with it in my life, but you have a sphere of control. So where does this stoicism come from? You have a sphere of control. These are the things you can do something about. And then there's these things that you can't. So where are you going to focus your attention?
Some people just like to complain.
But that makes you more reactive and out of control, right? And that makes you feel smaller, which I think in turn makes you more reactive and out of control.
Complaining makes you feel smaller?
I think so. Instead of saying, okay, well, here's a problem, here's an action plan, go.
Yeah, I think like spending any time at all like ruminating about anything you have no control over is a waste of time. I think if all these people are bothering in your life, if you spend time bitching about that, you're giving them more power. They're basically, you're allowing them to take up that much of your time, attention, energy, resources. It seems kind of self-defeating.
Even if it was somebody that is within your sphere of control, like somebody you could talk to, right? Like having a resentment towards them instead of solving the problem is just giving them space in your head.
Yep.
You know? So a big part
did
of the
she end up getting a hobby or
it was like a lot of work stuff, I remember, and like people at work, and then like her
that's why you work out right before, like you go to work and then you go to the gym and then you come home to your partner.
Well, but I have no problem. I have problems in my life that involve other people. I would want someone to talk to about them, but it was
I'd
just
want
like,
constructive advice and a strategic plan on how to approach this person that I might be finding difficult,
or even
not
if they,
to just say this person is, you know, bad or something.
See, what you're saying there is actually, and kind of what you said got me thinking about communication, man, woman, in relationship communication. if as a guy, you're basically doing wrong. You're stepping on your dick in the relationship if you hear her complaining about, you know, so-and-so from work doing this, that, the other thing, and then you immediately set about trying to solve the problem.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, you're doing wrong. You need to give her a big hug and tell her what a bitch that Roseanne is or whatever and agree, sympathize.
There's something to that, right? Like, there's sometimes we all just need to vent, you know? And I do think that if I probably wouldn't have been doing myself or this girl any favor if I was like, oh, what an idiot. What a bunch of bitches they all are, right? Because then that's like
feeding
a cushion to land on, you know, instead of saying, okay, well, that's certainly not how I would have dealt with that situation if I was this person you're complaining about. In this particular case, it was just like, there's nothing wrong with venting. There's nothing wrong with needing a shoulder to cry on. But it was just like almost paranoia and hysteria that I think was created from so much external focus, like so much focus on things you can't control, just led to this feeling of smallness and powerlessness that increases the reactivity and increases the paranoia.
Well, isn't that also lazy? Instead of looking in towards yourself, you're complaining about everything else.
Sure, yeah.
This happened. Yeah. Oh, this happened today where someone got a soup that was supposed to have pork in it.
Mm-hmm.
She complained three times that there was no pork in it. Someone else at the table handed her some pork and she refused it three times. She wants to complain about her meal not meeting her standards. When someone offers to solve this for her, she's fine.
Right.
And then she complains about it again.
Did somebody say, oh, then the problem is about something else? This is a vehicle for...
I didn't mention anything, but I just noticed how what she did not want to solve this thing.
No.
She just wanted to express her unhappiness with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you want to live your life that way, if you set out to be unhappy, you will succeed.
Yeah, this is where the secret comes in, right?
I guess that's a silver lining. Oh, I never read The Secret. My dad got into it. He's really like mystical and, you know.
Well, take all the mysticism out of it, right? And I think you even said this earlier in the show. People who focus on the positive will find the positive, right?
Because they'll be happier people. It's not that their lives are any different, but you're just going to focus on different things. And if you're happier, then you're going to probably be more productive and be more motivated. Like, happier people are.
But I remember,
and happier people talk to strangers, and happier people compliment people, happier people congratulate each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think angst and negativity definitely does have its place, though. I think it's angsty.
Yeah, stand-up comics angsty, right before they kill themselves.
Negative people, I think, get shit done. I mean, people who have like built spaceships and like made the computer were probably like pretty angsty, effed up in the head people, right?
Wearing shirts with naked women on them and whatnot.
Yeah, they probably read Maxim, not The Art of Manliness. But I don't know. There's a place for it.
He said, did you hear the story about the guy
with naked chicks on his shirt?
Yeah, he was part of this team that landed a spacecraft on a comet, and then they interviewed him. And oh, you'll love this story. They interviewed him.
See,
right?
I'm no longer on Facebook, so I don't get news anymore.
He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt with like women in bikinis on it.
Oh,
and
okay.
There's this feminist outrage over that shirt.
Feminist outrage is redundant.
you're right. There was this outrage over his shirt. Like, how dare you wear that shirt? You know, and they beat him down. Like in the media, in the matter of two days.
I landed a what? A thing on a comet. I landed anything on a comet.
Yeah.
Your argument's invalid.
Yeah.
I'll wear what I want.
Yeah.
Well, that gets back to what Antigone said. I credit myself with coming up with this. I'm sure somebody else has said it before, but everybody or most people are looking to be offended. They don't. When you get offended, you have power. Suddenly people listen to you. Suddenly a reporter wants to hear what you think.
Has that always been the case, though?
I mean, with the growth of media comes the growth of like the power of being offended.
Oh, right.
So,
everyone has a voice, even the stupids.
I mean, most people that were probably bitching and complaining about that titty shirt didn't really have they weren't really offended. I mean, it wasn't really that offended, but they felt like they should be or could be offended, and thus, you
they're
know,
bandwagon.
Started spouting off. Yeah. I mean, if you jump on a bandwagon of being offended, suddenly people listen to you.
But then he empowered them. He's like, I'm so sorry, I can't believe
yeah, he shouldn't
I
have
did
done
it.
That. Should not have done that.
Well, I'm sure he hired a PR person after this whole comet shindig, and that's what the PR person told him to say.
Yeah.
This happens all the time where people end up apologizing for really silly stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I saw some video the other day from the Jon Stewart show where the mayor of Minneapolis is holding up a point sign with a convicted criminal, black man, next to her. And so the news story is that she's flashing a gang symbol with a gang member.
Yeah.
she's pointing, and John Stewart points out that pointing is like literally an infant's first communication.
Yeah.
All she's doing is pointing. Turns out that she had criticized the local police department. This was the backlash for that.
Oh.
And it would have been a completely like powerless backlash, except everybody was so willing to jump on board and be like, oh, shame. Oh.
Did she apologize?
No.
Okay, great. That's the kind of PR person I would be.
Well, she made a statement about it, and she said, "We are pointing at ourselves."
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I could have had a press release about it at all, other than this is news? Question mark.
No, I would have, if I was the PR guy for that shirt, the shirt guy, what I would have done, I was, do not apologize. We are getting a shirt made. We're going to go get the profile picture off Facebook of everybody who chastised you, and we're going to have a shirt made of them lining up to fellate you for landing a spacecraft on a comet and then making you feel bad about it.
Or just Photoshop little boobies on all of them, especially the dudes.
Not enough.
And then have a photo op next to Miley Cyrus. Oh, Mirka. Yeah.
So trying to maybe bring it back full circle a little bit is anybody who I am in a conversation with and I say like the word cunt and they get offended and don't want to talk to me anymore. That's cool because you're not the kind of person I want to be with if that's that offensive to you.
Because you only like real cunts.
If I say
not
something,
them posing
if
cunts.
I say something vaguely racist, but also really funny.
Yes.
And people get offended and don't want to be with, like talk to me or associate with me. That's cool because I don't want to associate with you. Anybody that gets too touchy, too offended, they're like on such a knife edge. Of wait, am I offended or not? Wait, what'd you just say? Am I offended? Anybody who's like that, I can't be around. So
I can't. Really
when it comes to
that.
The complaints about How I Met Your Mother, I don't know if this fits in like completely, but the people who I associate with, who are my close friends, I tend to say offensive shit around them, not really care what I'm saying around them, because if I'm like walking on eggshells, monitoring my speech, being really careful what I say because I'm afraid of offending people, then I'm not being authentic. Neither are they. It's like real stifled
Absolutely.
Communication.
I totally agree.
So. Not that you should be, you know, I'm in a circle of friends now. I'm going to start F-bombing and let's talk about vaginas. I'm not like that. And you shouldn't be looking to do that. You should just be yourself, which unfortunately myself, just like that, what I just said. But when you're in a circle of friends, you should not be, you know, monitoring yourself. So your friend, just, it should be all right to be a little bit.
Yeah, I think like real friendships require a certain kind of self-assessment and self-knowledge, but honoring that self-assessment and acting on it and not holding back. I mean, do you lead with your best stuff? Like your best racial material.
Yeah.
When meeting somebody.
Do you recognize Matt as the inner black man that he is?
I do. Yes.
Yeah, I can say this stuff. It's cool. I'm a black man on the inside.
But yeah, it seems like, yeah, that's a real problem. Like relationships being conditional, you know, like, oh, this relationship is based on what I won't say. I feel like that's very common in family, you know?
Yeah.
Well, family's a whole different set of baggage.
But then there's other things where like work relationships. I mean, a lot of people make friends at work, you know, and they might be maintaining.
That's again, forced association though, because like, yeah. I mean, in modern society, you go through the forced association of school and then the, you know, upper school, college, and then your workplace, you just hang out with those people. You watch the same How I Met Your Mother episode. You discuss it around the water cooler. You go home and watch the game and then maybe some porn and you go to sleep and you do it again the next day.
Mm-hmm. And there's
you don't
a little
talk
bit,
to your neighbors. You call the cops instead of doing that. And like, that's it.
When you're at work too nowadays in our overly litigious society, like, oh, girl I met at a party, girl I've hung out with in a social circle, I will say things to her that I would never say to a friend at work because, you know, you're at work. You get fired if you offend somebody or say something wrong or, you know, like sexual harassment or whatever.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, there's
those classes were the most fun.
Work friends, you got to treat differently unless you, I mean, I've gotten to a point with work friends where I know them well enough where I treat them like regular friends. But for a lot of the associations I have at work, it's always a very filtered me. Not that I'm really that offensive normally, but, you know.
Well, I mean, people only discuss this other than the art of manliness. I've only seen it discussed as far as dating is concerned, how to talk to strangers, how to small talk, the art of conversation. These are all articles on the art of manliness. I do not see these types of articles on blogs meant for women.
Mm-hmm.
And as we searched right before the episode, looking for comparative articles with the art of manliness, like five friends that you need, lifelong brotherhoods, whatever. Like, there's nothing like that for women. So there isn't a market for women who feel disconnected from other females, well, but there is one for men.
Is there not that stuff for women because women naturally have that and men are missing it and therefore this is like a attempt at correction or something? I mean, don't women have like really intense, close, intimate friendships with other women? They do. I'm thinking of pillow fights right now. And
of course you are.
But
from both my personal life and from what I was reading today, women tend to have more one-on-one friendships, and they are more like physically intimate. Like women will touch each other more often. Women will go out one-on-one. And I know that that's how, well, that's how I am with both genders of friends. But with males,
guys,
they
actually
won't go out just one-on-one often as they will in a group.
You have to call it a mandate to kind of like self-mock it a little bit.
See, why is it a mandate? And
well,
it's a bromance because it's just you and one dude instead of the guys.
When guys overcome all their, you know, I'm a man stereotype and actually have like some kind of connection, you have to almost kind of have like a self-effacing humor attachment to it. Like you're going out on a mandate. We're having a bromance. No, you're just two friends who really enjoy each other's company, but you can't really do that or say that nowadays. So you got to kind of like filter it a little bit or kind of defuse the perception that other people have of it by saying, yeah, we got a bromance going on or something. I mean, those terms would not exist if this wasn't an issue, you know?
Right. And it wasn't an issue that long ago. So what has happened?
I don't know. I don't have any close men. I don't really have any close female friends either. Sorry, aww. I'm getting all choked up.
Are you Ronery?
Close so men lonely. Friends. I don't know why I don't have close men friends. I just, I don't know. I think I just do shit my own damn self, and that doesn't require the participation of
other
people.
Are you a hermit? Are you a social hermit?
I have some monkadelic, like,
I do too.
Shit going on in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in isolation.
And if I'm surrounded by people a lot, I seek isolation. I know there's like a lot of
But you're not answering. You're not answering the point though. Like one on one versus group stuff. Like I know myself. I have moved into the woods.
Yeah.
And it's very quiet there, and I very much enjoy that. I don't have people around me all the time like I used to, and I'm reading more. Thank you, Matt, for that Kindle. He gave me his first generation. He has the like updated one. I'm reading so much more. I love it. It's great out in the woods. It's quiet. The stars are out. Fire is our entertainment. But I still enjoy social time with people, and I enjoy it most one-on-one.
I enjoy it more, I think, when I do spend more time to myself. Like, it kind of gets old when you're always around people, I think, you know, and always around the same people. Mm-hmm. Like, I find, you know, because of the way I work, like, I don't work with anybody else. I pretty much work with myself. And, you know, until like 5 or 6 months ago, like, I was alone almost all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when there was a social thing, it was like so exciting, you know? But I also realized too that I was spending way too much time alone, and it was just comfortable, and I didn't know why, you know? Because there were times in my life where I was like very, very social, very, very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in a social situation, I wouldn't be shy. I just found like I wasn't seeking them, you know?
Well, were these like party situations? Like when it's time to be social, you go to a party and there are like, you know, dozens of people there. You're probably not going to have any meaningful conversations with any of those people in a party atmosphere.
Most of this was when I was living in Keene. I lived in Keene for about 6 months and I felt very lonely there. And like when there was some place I had to go, I would go. But before, I would be like, oh, I don't want to do this. But then I would do it and I'd be like, gosh, I'm so glad I did that. That was so much fun. The people there, that was great. So, but it was like hard to get myself to do that. Like I just seemed like I'd become so comfortable being alone. It was just my drive to isolate, which was too much. Do you isolate?
Intentionally so, yeah. I like isolation a lot. You know, what I was thinking about is at times in my life when I've been very social, whether it be because I have a girlfriend that's very social and thus I am tagging along and being social, or because I happen to, like, I lived upstairs from the Quill, the social club here in Manchester for a while, and I go downstairs and there'd be a bunch of people around and, hey, party, get drunk, whatever. Those times were good and all, but quickly, like, the feeling of, hey, I'm at a party, I'm having a good time, that kind of, like, faded after a while. Whereas if I'm alone for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks and then suddenly go to a party where I haven't seen, you know, like Antigone or people I know, then, you know, it's like there's shit to talk about. It's fun. It's different. It's exciting. So I think I found a good formula for my life is be like a hermit, like 3 weeks of the month and then maybe take a week and do shit with people.
Well, you were talking about the comfort that gives you, though. Like, so with Stoicism, you said there's a constant test. If you are completely comfortable by yourself, then you are not getting tested. Is it important to get tested? Like, bringing us back to the, like, ribbing your friends, having other people around.
Yeah, I think it is, because I think anything that becomes a comfort zone that's maintained for too long, it's probably not terribly healthy. I think it's either, you know, kind of taking away opportunities for growth or causing even maybe a kind of regression, right? If you just say, oh, this is where I'm comfortable, and you bundle all up, you know, and then you don't look for challenges and you don't look for interactions, you just kind of sink into this safe spot. Yeah, that's not really personal growth, I don't think.
How do you reconcile that idea with the idea of a long-term romantic relationship?
Well, by yourself is obviously easier than being with another person. But I think relationships require work and relationships need to grow.
But what about the comfort level of those relationships? Like, wouldn't you go to your long-term romantic relationship as a level of comfort?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it can be very comfortable, but it needs to like be moving forward too.
Yeah, I think you need to have somebody that's going to like push you out of your comfort zone on a regular basis. Otherwise, if you both are very like hermity and you both just like, let's go home, get under the blankets and watch. What do people watch nowadays? Dancing with the Stars. Have you seen this season of Dancing with the Stars? It's awesome. Anyway,
that's not what I do under the blankets, no.
But you need somebody that's going to push you and like take you out to like social situations and that kind of thing. And likewise, conversely, I think somebody who's all social butterfly and all needs to get somebody that just slows them the fuck down and gets under the blanket and watches Dancing with the Star every once in a while. you need to have, I don't know if it's an opposites do attract, but you need to have somebody that like pushes you to what you're missing.
I was thinking about that recently because there have been so many male friends that I've had in my life that have thanked me for pulling them out of their shells, for making them come out to like a comedy improv night or some show, some art thing. Like, hey, come on, it's like $5 or it's free. Like, let's go. Just these like nerdy guys that I have been friends with most of my teenage through now life. And I decided I don't want to do that anymore because just like these guys, I'm also like a nerdy introvert. And I took on that role. And it seems to me like the coping mechanism of the extrovert outward displays have just been exhausting. And I'm just going to go live in the woods. So if someone else wants to bring me out of my shell, that's cool. I'm going to go live there for a little while, just like apparently Matt and Brett have been doing in their own shells.
Well, it happened to me for a while. And then I realized like how fun and rewarding social experiences were. And I started to seek more of them, you know. But I mean, I wouldn't want to do it every night.
No.
But, you know, people can go through phases with that stuff.
Yes.
And I'm also,
I see
like,
that here every couple of months. Like, someone will start showing up a lot and then go back to wherever they came from and cycle.
I had a question for you, actually. And maybe you have some experience with this too, Matt, from being on this show. How about being, like, a public figure, you know? And, or at least, I mean, to the extent that a few thousand people know who you are. You know, and it seems I've had these interactions with people where to them it seems like we're already friends.
Yes. Well, yes, I do know what you're talking about. Well, I mean, if someone's listening to you on a regular basis, then and they meet you somewhere, they know a whole lot more about you than you know about them. You don't know who they are.
Right.
And so I know, you know, I know I talk about the same stuff again and again. My individual experience has been that of a child of immigrants, a Californian, you know, et cetera, et cetera. A gay dad, got a gay dad. Everyone, you know. People will talk to me about gay family members, or they'll talk to me about not being from America, or they'll talk to me about, you know, certain things, and they all know this about me. And that creates an artificial level of intimacy.
Yeah.
If like I'm actually going to become friends with someone, we're starting at
different levels.
Disparate. Is that how you pronounce that out loud? I'm only used to reading that word. A disparate relationship, right? Because they know so much about me and I don't know who they are at all.
I've had that experience.
So you get a lot of fans of School Sucks that come up to you and know all about you, and it's just, is it weird? Is it?
Well, they feel like they know me.
Yeah.
And they want to talk about school stories that they have, right? Because they've heard me talk for upwards of, you know, a couple hundred hours.
Sure.
You've been a significant part of their life for a while, whereas they have been nothing to you. And that's how y'all are coming at each other.
Yeah, and I'm not complaining about that. And I the reason why I brought it up is I'm wondering if that was like somehow responsible for this isolation that I do sometimes, right? If I'm projecting myself into the world like that, but then kind of like, you know, retreating into this seclusion. It's interesting. I don't know why I do it.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think the ability to be alone with yourself is a very worthwhile skill, and whether you choose to go with that for a majority of your life or not, you need to have that skill. And I think there's a lot of people out there who don't have that skill. And especially if you are a vaguely attractive, dateable female and you bounce from relationship to relationship to relationship and you aren't comfortable being alone, being with yourself, dating yourself, little bottle of wine, little bubble bath, whatever.
I know whatever. How to date myself. Yeah.
It's an important skill. So, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who just the thought of being alone is like so anxiety producing or whatever.
It was
and
for me.
Yet yeah. the issue.
Is it really?
I mean, that's, at that's one like, time. No, at one time it was.
That's like, that's my baseline. That's
and
like
yet we
I
are more
from.
Alone now than we have been throughout our entire history.
You're bringing it back to Facebook and social media, aren't you?
What
no,
do you mean?
I'm not. I'm bringing it back to thousands of years ago when we lived in close-knit communities. No one was by themselves. Now, you can live in a neighborhood for years, not know your neighbors. You're calling the cops instead of talking to your neighbors.
Yep.
You can be surrounded in people and be alone. Absolutely alone. I think that's like the modern story. That is why websites like The Art of Manliness exist with three-part articles on the art of conversation. Seriously? How to talk to people? There was one article about talking to strangers. He had a 21-day experiment talking to strangers. I do it here in New Hampshire. Did I do it in California? No, I don't want to be mugged tonight. Thanks.
I mean, I think we can all sit around and wax nostalgic about back when people, you know, would like write letters. I mean, I made a joke earlier when we were driving over here about getting some good stationery and a nice fountain pen for
yes.
you because you're off Facebook and you're corresponding.
Now that I'm off Facebook, but, I need to get my own personal stationery and like
I mean,
put perfume on
cool
the letter.
That's nothing new though. Go like 100 years ago and they were probably, I mean, society
yeah.
has and technology is moving faster now. So it probably happens with more regularity. But, you know,
and
you always look back
problem.
And say things aren't as good as they used to be or whatever. Also, I mean, and that's cool. Acknowledge that. Take time to think about it and gain what you can from it. But also, the world we live in now is the world we live in now. Social media is there. Learn to adapt.
It's
learn
just
people are realizing the problems of social media. People now, in situations where they would have met other people, mm-hmm. if there's a lull in your life somewhere, like you're standing in line at the grocery store, like you're in a waiting room, like you're on the commuter ferry.
You pull out your phone and play with
it. You pull out your phone.
It used to be used to talk.
It's just a transition.
We used to talk to each other. Now we pull out our phones.
I don't think we're lesser for it. I think we're just different.
It's just a transition. The reason why people used to be good at talking to each other and writing letters to each other is because they had done it for hundreds and hundreds of years.
And there were no other
viable options. We are the first generation that's grown up in this world, you know? So yeah, everybody sucks at this right now. It happened too fast. We're not even evolved enough to manage this amount of stimulation. But I think if people are conscious of it, if people become conscious of it, now there you could argue too that we're almost being split into two species, right? Where there's people who know how to use this stuff and they're harnessing it and they're making their lives better. And then there's like this other
they're making their lives better.
I'm making my life
maybe
better.
Maybe they are.
There are gives and takes to it. You're not
you're
meeting
right.
strangers
you're right.
on that ferry commute trip.
If we are doing this split.
And when I do, I'm like, oh, a stranger. They're going to want to talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, I better bring out my phone so they don't talk to me.
If you choose to go that way, if there is this split of people who are not being so plugged in and retaining these skills, and then there's the maybe the majority of people who are going off this way and just like, you know, playing on their phone.
Becoming slaves to it. Yeah.
I think that's okay. You know, if that's where society's going, then either go that way or not. I think as the human race, we're doing okay.
If this episode has been about anything, I think it was about isolation. And I can link to the article where I read, not only has Facebook and other social media not enlarged the Dunbar number, it has stayed about the same. It has changed the percentage of time we spend with our circles. So that inner circle, the Art of Manliness article got into this too with five types of friends you need.
Yep.
The inner circle across like different cultures, you know, that have been studied is five people. Humans used to, before social media, spend 60% of their social time on the five people and 40% on the others.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're spending 40% on the five people and 60% on the others. And the others are growing and growing and growing. That percentage on those five is going to get smaller and smaller. So instead of having your solid bros or your solid girls or, please, your solid non-gender specific buddies, you're going to have spread out acquaintances rather than connections with other human beings that take effort, that take years, that take, you know, bonding experiences. Instead, you're just going to be sharing likes on Facebook and not actually have any friendships. But that's okay. The government's here to help. They'll probably send a social worker to your house. So there's that.
Well, I can identify with that. And it's interesting that the core group that I've maintained contact with, like the people who are closest to me over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, I maintained all of those friendships virtually, you know. So I could see how what you're saying happens. You know, you're pulled out into this other world away from.
Are we talking about like a five person thing?
Oh, yeah.
Or 4 or 6 or 7 or. We're talking about that inner circle?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. Like, one of my closest friends for many years, Wes, was far away for a long time. Idaho, San Diego, Australia, you know? And we've actually had a more difficult time, like, connecting since he's been here in New Hampshire. Like, Wes and I have known each other since 2008. The first time we ever pressed the flesh was, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. And, you know, that has been more of a challenge because it's like, oh, well, he's here, you know, I'll see him, you know, but I don't. And we don't talk as much anymore.
Because he's right there. So why would you even plan?
There's something weird about it because like.
I think Lauren and I have the same thing. We used to write each other letters. Now we see each other all the time. And I'm like, hey, what's up?
But Wes and I talk less now.
And
that's the other thing. Like those friendships that require that effort, I think there's something special about that. You know, my webmaster and I talk every week. He's in California. Yeah. My friends in Connecticut, you know, I try to Skype with them. My friend in Pennsylvania, right? So I maintain like all of these long distance
friendships. It takes effort.
Right?
Yeah.
But this
is what I'm finding using regular email and text and stuff rather than Facebook. I am putting forth effort to talk with you, Brett.
Mm-hmm.
You, this one person. Rather than just shooting off a chat real quick.
Yeah, Skype.
Yeah. Well, we are past our time and I need to use the little girl's room. So this is not the first episode I've used that as an excuse. I gotta go. So thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you, Brett, for being on here.
My pleasure.
We didn't really talk about the gender differences, the girl line and the boy line and the school dances and all of that. I guess we can get to that later.
Yeah, maybe we could do that some other time. There certainly is a lot to say there.
And Matt? We've missed you. I've missed you.
I've tuned out like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Bibs.
You have missed me. You're damn right.
So oh, he was listening.
Audience, no doubt.
Yeah,
it was good to be back. Good times.
All right. Well, you can check us out on Twitter, iTunes, and sexliesanarchy.com. You've been listening to Sex, Lies, and Anarchy.
Where liberty.
Yes.
Something. Say something.
I
something witty. Quick.
You threw it to me isolated. In the middle of the tagline. So I said gets, and then maybe I thought...
Isolated.
Personal.
Yes. Wah, wah. For that.
Well, good finish.
Lauren's rolling her eyes.
Strong finish.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a positive review on iTunes. If you were angered by the show, please help us out by leaving negative reviews everywhere. If you think this is an important message for students, for parents, or for the future of intellectual freedom, please consider supporting us. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. For $6 a month, you'll get access to hundreds of additional hours of content while helping us grow and spread this message further.